on the internet for everybody to see, which means that they're attention whores. Understand, I fall into this category, okay? And like most artists, they have very little fiduciary sort of sense. They're not, their business acumen, you know, it just doesn't pass any current across the flu meter. And then you put all these people in a conglomerate like Keen Spot or Modern Tales, put them all in a forum and have them start talking about stuff. And you guys have read the Slashdot threads where it's, you know, all bitter and horrible and flame wars. They got nothing on web cartoons.
He left out the immaturity.
The web cartoons are far more immature.
I find that difficult to believe.
Well, no, some of them are physically immature. They have not yet hit puberty.
On Slashdot, a lot of them have hit puberty and hit back.
Anyway, that particular community is a very difficult one to participate in. And as you explore the internet, how many of you have internet friends? Raise your hand if you have internet friends. You've not met any. I've got lots and lots of internet friends, and I have to be really careful when I introduce one friend to another friend, because sometimes there are community connections that are just disastrous that I didn't know about until, you know, these two people participated in a flame war. Anybody hear of PvP, player versus player? Scott Kurtz has this talent for offending people. And he doesn't necessarily do it deliberately, but he's got a talent for offending people. And Scott Kurtz and I are good friends. When I was at Keen Spot, Chris Crosby, the head of Keen Spot, had this horrible, horrible relationship with Scott Kurtz. The two of them were always blaming each other. They just hated each other. I went to Comic-Con. I had a very pleasant sushi dinner with Scott Kurtz. And on my webpage, there was a photo of me chumming it up with Scott Kurtz. And Chris Crosby was, well, he was ready to tear me a new one. And that was the point at which I realized,
this sounds a lot like being in high school.
And you know what? A lot of those people are like that.
A lot of those people are like you.
when Steve said, you know, I'm unique, they're not unique, but in a small set of web cartoonists who are running things like a business, or who are, you know, making a living off of it, I'm one of a very small set of people who had a huge business responsibility, you know, working for a large corporation, and took all of that expertise and said, you know what, I'm going to build a business for myself, and it's going to be about art.
You are also an exemplar of something else, which is to a slightly lesser extent true of Steve, and to a slightly greater extent true of me. In the future, all jobs will become performance art. And the three of us are actually leading indicators of that, because part of the way we do our jobs is by being public personalities who do those jobs.
That was how I got my product manager job at Novell. They did not pay me a nigh on six-figure salary in order, you know, because I was some magnificent prognosticator of the email market. They paid me what they paid me because when I stood up in front of a group of people and talked about what we were doing, that group of people became convinced that that was the future.
But there's a more general trend here. As average wealth levels rise and people become less worried about survival necessities, everything's going to turn into performance art. You watch.
That means I need to get better at what I do, doesn't it?
Yes.
And we all need to get better.
Or find something better.
Tech support is a performance art. Step one, okay. You have to make this person happy.
What percentage of it is soothing a customer? There you go. But I mean performance art in a slightly different sense. Not just that it's a people-to-people performance, but in that more and more people are doing jobs as an expression of their personality and as an expression of their artistic urges rather than simply because they need to make money. And as the average wealth level rises, look for more and more of that to happen.
How many of you read Ian Banks' culture novels?
Oh, the economics totally doesn't work.
Well, not enough.
Yeah, well, I...
You don't have homework.
The economics doesn't work.
Ian M. Banks. They're a lot of fun to read, but the economics totally doesn't work.
I mean, I know the economics don't work, but it's very interesting that you meet people in those books who are doing, they're in a society where wealth levels have risen high enough that supposedly everything is provided for them, and yet they still work. We meet a guy who wipes down tables in a restaurant, and a culture outsider comes up and says, why are you wiping tables? This is menial work. Why are you being forced to do this? I'm not being forced to do this. I like shine on these tables. It just, I enjoy it. Now, maybe not. Most of us wouldn't get off on that. How many of you like cleaning your kitchen? I like cleaning my kitchen. And as I read that, I saw that.
You want to come over to our house?
I like cleaning my
what's the level of my
anyway, fascinating.
Note though that it would appear we have a fallback if the web comics are gay.
In running my comic as a business, I make money off of Google AdSense. And I recognize that some of my interest, my readers are not all interested in web comics and comic books, which contextually are the ads that Google wants to throw on my page. Right. How many of you like pizza? Show hands. How many of you like to try to make pizza? Okay. Well, if you were reading my comic, at one point I wrote a little blog under my comic about this experience I had making a double-decker pizza, because I fondly remembered the Pizza Hut Piazza thing. And I wrote about this, and Google Ads came up with ads about, you know, pizza recipes and olive oil and whatever else, and bang, my revenue for the day went up, and I realized not only am I in the business of creating comic strips that you need, I'm in the business of writing about the things that I'm interested in.
You are partly in the business of being somebody interested.
Yep.
And by the way, speaking of cooking and you, you have managed to make me regret more than ever before in my life that I'm allergic to cheese.
Sorry. I did not set out to invent a new food.
Does everybody know about this?
I was looking for two words that sounded... Yeah, how many of you speak Spanish? Speak Spanish? Okay. Chupa queso means literally suck cheese. Okay? And I needed a fast food for my comic strip, and I just had a Taco Bell gordita. And I thought, oh yeah.
Oh my God, inspired by Taco Bell. That's horrible.
I created the restaurant, which was Taco Bufa. And have you been to Puerto Rico? Tirar un bufa. Bufa means to throw a fart.
Oh, I thought it was from the Latin bufa for a frog.
No.
Oh, okay.
I was pronouncing it bufa.
I love the smell of this buffet. Anyway, so I picked two words that sounded like cheap Mexican fast food, chupa queso. And then about a year later, my wife bought me this cheese book, and it showed me how to make cheese crisps. And I was on a low-carb diet at the time, and so I made a cheese crisp. I thought, boy, that's yummy. That's almost like a taco shell. I bet I could put stuff in it. Well, I've got cheese right here. So I folded a cheese shell around
some cheese with your cheese.
And I bit into it, and I was like, man, oh my God, it's a chupa queso.
I have a half a suggestion.
Yeah.
Hey. It's only half a suggestion because I'm not sure how to carry it out. I know enough about trademark law and I don't know where I'm going to know that this is easier said than done. But you have invented a word that sounds like cheap Mexican food. There are companies out there that desperately need words to describe cheap Mexican food. And it would sure be nice if you could own that one before they suck it up.
By the way, if you want to experience the chupa queso, 2:30 in the Consulate tomorrow.
Oh, 2:30 or 5?
5. Okay.
And my problem is, my friend has invented a new food, and I'm allergic to the fermentation products in it.
Sounds like you're allergic to everything you eat.
What was really funny is I was talking to my brother about it on the phone, and he said, he was just horrified. That's just like a cheese sandwich in cheese bread. There's no bread. And you know what? The other day I put bacon in it. And he said, oh, you can't go to heaven now.
All it needs to achieve some sort of horrible critical mass is jalapeno peppers.
Oh, yeah.
It did work pretty well, yes.
Didn't the last year use the jalapeno cheese?
Oh, that's right. We did. We used jalapeno cheese. Uh-huh. Those were.
That would be the chicken queso queso.
I knew there was a horrible kind of inevitability.
Well, that's
what you do with habanero cheese.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. What?
Habanero cheese. That's dangerous.
Yeah. Habanero. Oh, I like habaneros.
Okay. Yeah, I still have habanero chili powder a while back.
Ooh, cool thing to do with powdered habanero is put it on deviled eggs. That looks just like the thing. I've had them. They're delicious.
Yeah, but the people not expecting it.
But you have to be prepared.
What, the 911 pre-dialed?
Yeah, so you like spicy foods.
Oh, yes, I do.
Steve's not a big fan of green spicy foods. I like spicy foods, and I thought, do I like spicy foods just because when I'm out eating with the other guys, it's just a piss and match about, you know, how many of these I can eat? And then my friend explained to me, he said, oh, the capsaicin molecule is bonding with the pain receptors on your mouth that tell you that the temperature is between 120 and 180 degrees. And those pain receptors, in order to fire, there's a neurotransmitter that gets, and enough of that starts moving, and your brain has to release endorphins.
Yep. It's all about the endorphins. Did you know this has been clinically confirmed?
Oh, I knew. There's capsaicin cream that you can put on...
Oh, no, it's better than that. There was a psychologist in New York who got curious. So he found a bunch of pepperheads and fed them in the old four half peppers. They liked it. Then he injected them with naloxone. It's a drug that blocks the endorphin receptors in the brainstem. Then he fed them the same food and watched their faces.
Really?
And they didn't like it.
And they didn't like it at all.
For those of you who don't know, the Narcan, naloxone, is a very specific antagonist for endorphins.
Yeah.
It will knock a heroin addict down off his high like that.
Yeah. So essentially, pepperheads are endorphin junkies. I can stop anytime I want.
Well, the thing about the P-trams is that you can deplete it.
Yeah.
Okay. The hotter the food you eat, the more often you eat hot food, the less of that stuff exists in the reservoir. You still get the endorphin high, but it doesn't hurt as much. And you've got P-trams, you've got pain transmitters all the way through you. You ever heard the term ring of fire?
Yeah.
Well, there.
I've never had this happen to me, fortunately.
Okay. You're just not eating hot enough. I discovered something very fascinating about spicy foods, and that is that there is a reason why in cultures where spicy foods are eaten a lot, that belching, loud belching, better out than in, always, loud belching is popular. That's because if they burp quietly out their nose, they will die. Because the nose isn't getting those, getting the capsaicin. I did that once. I burped. My eyes watered. I just about passed out, and I wasn't at full strength either.
I tasted pure cap once. A very, very small amount. And that's one of those things I'm really glad I did once, and I never need to do it again.
You guys are familiar with, the scale of 1 to 10. When you're rating hot stuff, Tabasco sauce is about 2,500 on the Scoville scale. A really good pepper sauce, really, really solid pepper sauce, will be between 60,000 and 100,000. So think about how hot Tabasco is, and then think about something that is more than 10 times as hot. What he had was around 8 million. that's pure capsaicin, registered about 8 million on
the... No, I thought it was 60,000.
No. 60,000 Scoville sauce, the white crystals, the pure capsaicin, the white crystals are around 8 million.
No.
Police pepper spray is 2.5 million. Okay? What you had was more potent than weapons grade pepper spray.
I and one benefit of eating all this hot food is I accidentally zapped myself with pepper spray once. And you know, it was uncomfortable for about half an hour, but I was okay.
And I got this cool endorphin.
What, you know, one of the program items I thought about doing for this con was a panel on the history and appreciation of hot peppers, and I guess we're doing that.
Oh, but we left Steve out.
Fun historical...
Please.
Your fun historical fact for the day. We think of hot peppers, capsaicin peppers, as being characteristic of certain Chinese regional cuisines, Sichuan and Yunnan and so forth. The fact is, those are New World plants. They were introduced to China in the 1700s by Americans trading up the Yangtze River. That's your fun fact for the day.
Wasn't that much of it?
Yeah. Before that, what they apparently used was a lot of black pepper from India. Until we traded them the plants.
Yeah. Until we gave them the good stuff.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
Which plant was it?
The serious capsicum peppers are actually native to the New World, specifically native to a region stretching north from Peru to southern Mexico. And the Chinese actually got theirs from the New World via itinerant American traders a couple centuries ago.
I'm going to have to remember that because I was at this Thai restaurant the other day where they had jalapenos, actually serving jalapenos with them. And there's some Thai peppers that are traditional and jalapenos are non-traditional. And somebody was barking at him about, you put jalapenos on my plate. Jalapenos are a Mexican pepper. And I want to be able to go in and say,
they're all Mexican peppers.
We're
going to
call
them
DS.
Eric, thank you. This was fun. This was doing over. Steve, I had a good time. The rest of you?
Thanks,
yeah.
Steve.
So we have Eric.